Jacqueline from Tamilan.
I'm Jack F. from County Line, and I am an addict. Yeah. I'm an addict! gosh, I'm so grateful to be here. I'm resistant to standing, so I was like, we should rearrange the stage and put chairs. But that's me. But, you know, I look around this room and the quality of what Narcotics Anonymous has made me is by the people that are in my life. And I'm so grateful. I have some kick-ass people in my life, and my tribe shows up, you know. And you know, people that I've known throughout my process of recovery and through what I've been through continue to show up for me. And I was feeling nervous, and my first sponsor used to say, who's now my new sponsor, who was my first sponsor from Philly. If that's confusing, we'll clarify after the meeting, but she used to say, you're nervous because you're about to tell the truth, you know, and I'm grateful to, like, not fool myself, not tell myself lies anymore, not be in what we call denial. You know, I'm not a major, like, I know every line in the Narcotics Anonymous basic text, but it lives within me. Like, I know it spiritually. It's the very grounding of who I am. It's how I talk in business. It's how I talk in friendships. It's how I talk in family. That's who I am, you know? And so, what's the topic again? We're exactly where we're supposed to be. We're exactly where we're supposed to be. And that was a tough one for me. You know, I wrote down some notes when I pray in the bathroom before I speak. You know, I get on my knees, and that was a tradition handed to me from my first sponsor. And, you know, I asked that, you know, you work through me and it not be about me, that it be about the message and not the mess. But part of my story is the mess. Like, you know, this is with 32 years clean, there has been some mess this year, and there are people to testify that there has been mess, you know. And you know, I wrote down acceptance, grace, and opportunity, you know. And one of my other sponsors used to say, this is an opportunity to grow. This is an opportunity to grow, when I was so resistant to what I was going through. So my, just to give a little background, I got clean. First of all, how much time do I have? Are you gonna let me know?
I let you know 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Like 20 minutes.
So I should make this story longer. Okay. But I got clean in Philly, and you know, it was some hardcore Philadelphia getting clean. I went to a meeting every day called Happy Hollow. And my first experience in going into that meeting was, oh my God, it was about 99 to 120, Jimmy knows, to 125 addicts in a room at 9 o'clock in the morning. And it was loud. And it was like stories that I had never heard about using. And but, you know, my sponsor said, you get there, you get on the front row, and she used to call it the intensive care unit. You go straight to the intensive care unit, you sit on the front row, and you raise your hand. And you raise your hand only to say, if anything, my name is Jackie and I'm an addict. That's it. And I'm a newcomer. And, you know, I remember walking into that meeting for the first time. I was like, oh my gosh. And my skin was crawling. I was like, I felt like I was using, you know. And for whatever reason, it was for the grace of my higher power. I heard my sponsor's voice, and I believed in her. And I trusted that she wanted to see me successful in my recovery. And I walked to the front row and I saw everybody was looking at me. Everybody knew every detail of what I had on, the sweat on my upper lip, on my, everybody knew everything about me. And I sat on that front row. And there were a bunch of women that had substantial clean time. And they would say, "Come here, honey, sit right here." And it was these elders, these women in Narcotics Anonymous that held me down. And when I raised my hand and said, "My name is Jackie, I'm an addict and a newcomer." And I lowered my hand and I just cried. And they hugged me and loved me. And that was the first kind of breaking of my denial. And so when I'm in denial, I'm usually not accepting where I'm at. That's what's happening. So I moved to California at 3 years clean, hooked into some really beautiful people here and listened to it and listened to the recovery of some people. I heard about Pepe before I got here, and I just was listening to tapes and tapes. And when I got here in California, I was like, oh, these are the sponsees of Pepe. And it was really beautiful to hear the shares within the rooms. But, you know, so I've been here and, you know, I got all the gratitude of recovery. I started to clean up. I started to say, like, you know, I don't want to use anymore, no matter what. Someone told me to come here and to, when I come to California, the only thing that matters is your recovery. Don't worry about a job, don't worry about a car, don't worry about any of that. Just get into a room of Narcotics Anonymous. And I did that. And I did that. And life changed little by little. And I shared with a newcomer this morning, I said, I used to come to this convention and could not afford the parking. And it was so, the gratitude sits in me like, I can afford the parking and a coffee from Starbucks. Like, you know, that those are the little things, right, that happen along the journey of recovery. So, you know, I became marriage material, and I found a husband that loved me, supported me. He was not in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, but fully respected my clean time and my recovery. He was grateful for it because he said, you know how to communicate best based on your learning in Narcotics Anonymous. You know how to respect another individual's time and space based on Narcotics Anonymous. So I became wifey material, you know, and I got married and, you know, beautiful wedding and things beyond my wildest dreams, literally, and my career took a charge, and I started examining some of my wildest dreams and going after them and achieving them, and it was like, what? And there were down times. Like, I remember in 2008 where I almost lost my business and, you know, were being sued, and there were hard times, but, like, I just was good. I was good. I would call Selma 100 times, like, what do I do? What do I do? And that's what happened. That's how I got through. And so 4 years ago, my husband passed away. Love of my life, right? And I was like, there's no way that I'm right where I'm supposed to be. There's just no way. There's no way that this is my life. And, you know, the interesting thing is that it's interesting how addiction still shows up. It's interesting how my disease still shows up. And, you know, I was, you know, still like in my, I still made meetings. I still, you know, was connected to my tribe. We call it the Rainbow Tribe. And we're on the phone or we're in meetings, and COVID was happening and my husband's, you know, health was diminishing. And, you know, it was a crazy time, you know, but, you know, I held on. And when he passed away, it was so freaking surreal. And it was surreal in the sense like, why did this happen to me? Why did this happen to him? Like, everything was cool. And there was just no explanation. There was nothing. There was nothing that anybody could say, oh, he's in a better place now. And all I was like, get away from me. You know, because we don't know how to deal with death in the, at least I know, in our society. We say all the kind of crazy shit that we don't know about. We don't know where they are. I'm like, how do you know he's in a better place? Have you been there? You know? And I really started to like really dig my heels in. And then like, you know, and this is what was so hard for me to admit. Like who I am and my persona, I was lonely. My soul was devastated. We did everything together. We did business together. We did friendships together. We traveled. I became so lonely. And I hooked up with somebody who was really about my addiction. My addiction came out and he was embodiment. Like he walked into a room, he looked like every piece of my addiction, sex, consumption, just like all of that. And I was like, I knew in my gut, I know what my addiction looks like. But with sadness and loneliness, I was like, fuck it. I had the fuck it. I was like, whatever. And I tell you, all along, for probably 2 years on and off, and my friends and my family and my loved ones were witnesses, I was like, how is this happening to me? I'm 32 years clean, like, or 30 years clean. Like, how am I, like, how did I stoop to this level? You know, he was using, he was freaking disrespecting every one of my boundaries. He was creating these, and it was back to like before I got clean, I was in an abusive relationship, and I found myself there with the same feelings of shame and isolation and guilt and fear. And I was like, how did this happen? Nothing has changed. I started to question like my program, like nothing has changed that this person is in my life. And it was, I hit a bottom. I hit a bottom. I hit a bottom where I wasn't sure that I was going to get out clean. Our 10th step says we can back ourselves into a corner where we might not get out clean. And I was there. And, but the string, the thread were my people in Narcotics Anonymous. Why? Because I could tell them the truth. I could tell them the truth, not just about what was going on. I could tell them the truth about how I was justifying the most insane shit in my head. And they would say, okay, well, let's look at that. That's the kind way of saying, are you out of your mind? Well, let's look at that, Jack. Fast forward, you know, I was in front of a person that I really trust, and she's not in recovery, but she's known me for years and years and years, and she said, you're in your addiction. That hit me between my eyes. You're in your addiction. You're acting like a using addict. And I was like, what? And people I respect were like, listen, you know, some people from the East Coast kept it. They were like, listen, I would never let that motherfucker in my life. He would have to go. Is he gone? But the bottom line is there was an acceptance like, this is where I am because I'm in grief. And I started to give myself grace. Jack, not everybody's grief looks the same, but this is what yours looks like. And it's not pretty, And it's not what you would like it to be. It's not like in a book where, yes, you know, I learned how to pray and I... No, it was ugly. This is what your grief looks like. So after really accepting me and not hating me every morning for being in this situation, not beating up on myself every day for like, how could you? You're in recovery. You're in Narcotics Anonymous. You have this and that. You go out to these business meetings and you perform like you have all the confidence in the world, and then you come and you slide under the rock of low self-esteem. How did I figure like this is real? And I just looked at the steps. It was again about the steps. I am powerless over the situation, and it is making my life unmanageable. And that was the first thing when she said, you're acting like you're in your addiction. That was it. I was seeing it. And then, my second step was like my group, the people I could tell the truth, that I could be who I am and move out of like this like ugly place of how I looked at myself. It was not how I looked at the world, it's how I looked at myself. And when I was able to, I said, you know what? This is an opportunity for me to learn. This is an opportunity to learn who I am and what I deserve. And my friend said to me, okay, you have a $1 million diamond, and somebody comes up to you and says, I'll give you $1. You're gonna look at them like, what the? And that's how I had to start to look at not just relationships, but even some of my transactions in work, even sometimes, you know, my family, and even like where I stood in certain situations. Was I being offered $1 and I had a $1 million diamond? You know, was I being offered, somebody trying to negotiate, I'll give you $100,000, still not enough. And someone used to say to me, are you willing to sell your spirit for $1, for $2, for $100,000? So I came to believe that I didn't have to live that way anymore. And it gave me a greater appreciation for newcomers. And it gave me greater appreciation for people that shared with 30, 35, 40 years clean that they were going through things. Some of them who have went out, I got it. I got it. Because we use over our feelings. We use over those things that hurt us the most. You know, I just want to say, like, I'm beyond grateful for this program. Like, wherever I go, whatever I do, I know it's about Narcotics Anonymous that has given me the freedom to be me, the freedom to be like, I feel joyful. Like, you know what was weird? I learned when I got into acceptance that like grief and joy can live in the same room, can live in the same head, can live in the same heart. Like, I didn't get that until going through such devastating loss. And I'm grateful that I stayed here for that lesson. Because I could have picked up. I really could have. You know, I know you all would have tackled me and whatever, but it was on my mind. You know, it's that either kill myself or, well, usually it's just kill myself or not pick up, but instead just kill myself. So anyway, I love you all. I love Narcotics Anonymous, and I thank you for allowing me to speak. I thank you to the Convention City Committee for asking me to be in this miracle of recovery. So thank you.
That was great. Thank you again, Jacqueline. We're going to now introduce our next speaker, Kellen from Kern County.
My name is Calvin, and I'm an addict.
Calvin!
Oh, wow. So, thank you, Jack. Man, it takes me on a different pathway. You know, I can ponder and think. Like when I was asked to come to the meeting and share. This is from 2011. Our banners on the wall. All the banners. All the speakers are based on the banners on the wall. And I was out there, and I was Friday. We got here Thursday, and I was watching them build the event. One banner went up, and then another banner went up, and another banner, and then people are milling around, and they're trying to prepare for the speaker jam. And then I would wander around. I would sit in there, and it was real quiet. And then I went in yesterday, early in the morning, when all the banners were up. And it was, I was just sitting in there, and I sat in different chairs in the room. And every chair I sat in was my chair. I sat in the front, on the side. I wandered around, and I looked at the banners, reading about the themes and thinking about, you know, if I was at this one, if I was at that one, and which ones was I on the committee with. And then I wandered around, I sit in another chair, and I'm like, oh, this is my chair too. This is my chair. Every chair is our chair. And our theme is from 2011. I think it's the 16th convention, and it was, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. We're right where we're supposed to be. Right where we're supposed to be. And that's easy to say when you feel like you're right where you're supposed to be. That is so easy to say. You're on a mountaintop, and you're with a loved one, or you're on a nature hike, and I'm like, man, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. Right where I'm supposed to be. And then there's times when you're grieving, and you're with my mother, and I'm grieving, and I see tears and then on our last days, and I see her, and she responded to me when I got there, and she had been unconscious for quite some time, and that was the end coming up real soon, and it was hard for me to believe that this is where I'm supposed to be right now. Right now, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But I was clean long enough, and I stayed clean consistently, that I was able to give my mother many, many years of recovery to balance the scales of my insanity out. And I was there with her, and I was able to hold her and be there, and I was right where I was supposed to be. And then times when somebody would do that last one, and then we're talking to a parent and trying to explain and trying to hug and really not say anything. We're just, I don't know. It's addiction. Man, it's like, it doesn't feel like that's right where we're supposed to be, but that's where we're supposed to be. And that's the life of recovery. You know, I don't get to decide what happens next. I had a friend of mine that's in here in this room right now that left the convention and got into an accident. Was that right? That went from the most exciting weekend ever to like, holy mackerel, this is right where I'm supposed to be. And people are getting phone calls and like, wow, this is right where we're supposed to be, I guess. It's hard to accept that this is right where we're supposed to be when we're going through things that are different or challenging and just uncertain. But this is right where we're supposed to be. This fellowship, Narcotics Anonymous, is something that, I've been clean since. So all the speakers, it's crazy that I look at all the speakers, they've been clean 30 plus years. We were a lot younger, all the speakers, when we got here. We were at least 30 years younger. So my clean date, which is my sponsor, Duke, he says many things to me and to my brothers and to everybody. But he says one thing first, my most valuable asset is my clean date. And that's July 25th, 1990. And if I don't change that, then I'm going to be cool. He also says, which when I was younger, it didn't make as much sense to me, but he also said to me, it's an honor and a privilege to grow old in Narcotics Anonymous. And we are growing older. And with older comes new challenges, new fights, new battles, new new journeys, new chapters of right where we're supposed to be. So he also said that the truth is in the literature. So as long as I start with some literature, then at least, you know, that portion's all going to be true. So Let me see what I got here. Yeah, get my glasses first. This is one of my new challenges, my glasses. So this is from the basic text. Step 3. We have surrendered our will and our lives to the care of a power greater than ourselves. If we are thorough and sincere, we will notice a change for the better. Our fears are lessened, and faith begins to grow as we learn the true meaning of surrender. We are no longer fighting fear, anger, guilt, self-pity, or depression. We realize that the power that brought us to this program is still with us and will continue to guide us if we allow it. We are slowly beginning to lose the paralyzing fear of hopelessness. The proof of this step is shown in the way we live. We have come to enjoy living clean and want more of the good things the NA Fellowship holds for us. We know now that we cannot pause in our spiritual program if we want all that we can get. So all that we can get. So my clean day was then, and it still is. And reading that then, it's like, wow, what am I going to get? You know, what's going to happen? And then moving forward, and the literature is still the same literature, whether you're 1 day, 1 month, 1 year, or 35 years. So it still says the same thing, that there's still more. I can get more, more and more and more. And it's not like it's not the more of more, I want more money, or I need more ego, and I need more power. It's a different kind of more. It's a more of another hug. That's another hug that I hadn't felt yesterday or 5 minutes ago, but I'm feeling now. It's more. I'm getting more then. I'm getting more when I sit and I listen. I'm getting more. There's so much more. I'm getting more when I get to listen and work and process step work and step living with my sponsees or other people. I get more when I get to open a door and someone comes in and we turn the light on and we share. I get more when I see my children succeed in the things they're doing. I get more when my wife smiles at me. I get more when I can smell the skin of my little granddaughter. I get more when I get a set with a friend last night during a meeting and we get a laugh and giggle and, you know, and talk about things and feel the fellowship just, you know, engulf me. There's so much more. I don't want to stop getting more. I want more and more and more. I'm obsessed with getting more of that part. Not the part of like, I need a bigger bank account. That's a different type of more. This more is something that just fills our spirits, and it gives me more strength to handle the times when this is right where I'm supposed to be. This is right where I'm supposed to be. When it's painful and there's so much uncertainty. And my sponsor says, Duke, says we can't live in fear and faith at the same time. And I will argue that. Because, and I maybe not at that microsecond, maybe I'm not, but I will waver in and out of fear and faith, fear and faith, fear. And I don't know when I'm in it, when I'm out of it, when I'm transitioning from one to the other. But when I'm in it, and when someone's hurting and I'm in it and I don't know, or when something's happening to me and my family and loved ones are in it, and they're like, what is going to happen to him? So only to qualify, because I wish we all had to have a silhouette of the day we got here. So you're like, oh yeah, that, yeah. And it should stand next to, we should have a silhouette from July 24th, 1990. And it stands next to like, okay, he's an addict. So we wouldn't have to qualify at all. It's just like, yeah, that's the guy. Lived in Bakersfield, got loaded in East Bakersfield, all over East Bakersfield, all over Bakersfield. I know how to use a matchbook as a file. I know that earwax is a lubricant. I know that cotton fever isn't from eating too much cotton candy ice cream. There's my qualification. The recovery is the best part. When I walked into my first meeting and I was in the car with my grandparents, they didn't know what to do with the likes of me. No one in my family had seen the likes of me. I don't think anybody ever seen the likes of us. And they're like, man, they didn't know what was wrong with me. They had no idea. There was gambling addiction in our family, and there was other kind of addiction. But like, what is this? Is a whole other animal here. And they took me to my first meeting, and I was living in Lamont outside of Bakersfield, and we drove to that meeting, and There was a lot of quiet in the car. I was 24 years old. I was scared, hurt. I had no idea what was next. And they dropped me off on Niles on a Tuesday night at a meeting. And that's why Tuesday has always been very special to me. And I went in and I sat in my chair and everybody was drinking coffee and smoking in the rooms at that time. And so that's what I was doing. It was like my first real jump into coffee. And I was sitting there because I wanted to be in. I wanted to fill in. I didn't know where I was. I had no idea. I think now with so much TV and all kinds of stuff, you can watch a show and all of a sudden the fellowship's on there. But in 1990, I had no idea. There was no like, what is the fellowship, you know? So I'm sitting in a chair and I am feeling something, definitely right where I was supposed to be. And I was feeling something. Feeling something like I'm feeling right now. And the goosebumps come in, and I equate my goosebumps to all the little recovering addicts all over the world, because there's billions of goosebumps on me. And I always think that that's you guys running up and down me, you know, and like, it's going to be cool. And I was sitting there, and I was like, oh man, what is going on? And I could feel something, and I could just like screaming inside me. And I was like screaming inside me, and I was crying so loud inside. And all of a sudden, my hand went up. And I said, my name is Kellen and I'm an addict. And I started blabbering and crying and doing whatever. And it was, I released it. I opened it up and let it out. I let the addiction out. And then I sat there quietly, kind of like sobbing a little bit. And at the end of the meeting, I always recognized the people that recognized this fragile person when I came in. Hug those people that are new. Hug them, welcome them, let them know, you're right where you're supposed to be. And so Billy May, Kirby, and Jesse were the three. They each embraced me, not a very clean-looking addict, a very wild-looking addict, and they each hugged me in a way that I hadn't really been hugged before, and they each whispered something to me, and it was the truth. And I left there, after that first night and experience. Everybody's experience is different. That was my experience of day one, July 25th, 1990. And I went back out to the car. I got in the back seat and my grandparents said something. They're like, well, how was it? How was it? And I'm like, I don't know, but something happened to me tonight. And we drove home quietly. Their higher power, you know, is big culture part of our family, and it was quiet, and they were, you know, definitely in talking to their higher power, you know, fix him, help him, please. And that night was the first night, and I didn't know what it was. I learned what it was later by learning about our literature and learning about, you know, words longer than, you know, two or three or four syllables, you know, bigger words. I was learning about words, and I didn't know what happened that night until later. But when I went home, I laid down and I fell asleep. And then I started the process. And I've been active. I did go to treatment, and Narcotics Anonymous Area Service was in that treatment center, so I was very fortunate to find, you know, my original, my OG, the only, you know, this is my life. And what happened the first night as I hung around and realized is I got my first taste of serenity, peace and calmness of the mind, where the wheels of if, would, should, could, why weren't just going on. And I slept so sound. And I've had thousands of nights of serenity and during the day, evening, but to be able to, sometimes the wheels get going and again, is this right where I'm supposed to be? Please shut my mind up. And I was in my mind last Tuesday, you know, over, you know, some stuff at work. I'm like, oh, I got HR, this and that. And I'm trying to navigate through a process and I couldn't shut it off. Couldn't shut it off. It was going and going and going and going. And then we went to the Tuesday night River of Recovery, a spinoff from the Wheel of Recovery home group thing. So, and it wasn't until I heard members and we were reading literature where it stopped and then it would creep. It didn't just go away, it would creep back in again. Do this tomorrow, do that. And then it faded out. And then someone else shared, and then it like finally washed out. And then I shared about it for a moment and didn't let it control my share. But I said, this is what's going on in my mind right now. And then it completely washed out. And then my wife, serenity prayer, you know, in the morning, said my serenity prayer, did my meditation of prayer, did my text messages, and started the day, and it all was fine. It all worked out. It was like, man, a lot goes on in my head. But to be a part of, the fellowship has taught me so much. So I want more. I still want so much more. I want to continue on. And I spent a lot of time in that larger room, the main, and just reflecting on my life and what's going on and how much we affect each other and how much the fellowship has changed. To think if we plucked any one of us out of the fellowship from that day one, how much different this world would be, and not in a good way. Not in a good way. If we plucked anybody out of this room, how it would change the world in not a good way. It would, I couldn't imagine if my wife didn't come into the fellowship. You know, I don't want to even try to put that, you know, butterfly effect into effect. Couldn't imagine not having my boys and my grandkids and the home and the life I have. I couldn't imagine now that we sat and talked and we shared, Jack. Thank you for your share. And to think that now I have a new piece, I have this new feeling that I absorbed from you. And I couldn't imagine if you weren't here to let me feel that. Yeah, somebody else could have been here, other, and I might on a different track, but not the same exact feeling I'm feeling now. Could have sat with somebody other last night and had a wonderful time, but not exactly the way it was. It's all meant to be the way it is. And again, when you're in it and it's not, like, why is this happening? And so this week has been like, Friday overwhelmed me with emotion and feelings. That just, the lid was lifted this weekend. So for those, I turned 60 on November 15th, and I had a massive heart attack like 7 days later. So, happy birthday. So we live in the mountains, so spiritual, and our house is based off Narcotics Anonymous. Our home has always been based off Narcotics Anonymous. Serenity prayers, literature everywhere, stuff from around the world that friends have brought when they travel and they bring back. Our home is centered on Narcotics Anonymous. Simple, that's what it is. And it happened, and my dog saw it before I saw it. They recognized that, and they were acting weird. And I told my wife, don't freak out, but it's happening. And we gotta go. So we drove to the fire station, and it was happening. And it hurt like nothing I've ever felt. The only way I can describe the pain of a heart attack is that it feels like you're going to die. And it feels like you're going to die. That's what it feels like. And a lot went on, and here I am standing. You know, but what happened this week? So there's a lot of things that are going on when you're into something this, and people love you. Is that I had my situation going on. In a room, and when the ambulance doors opened up, and I saw my daughter and my youngest son there, it hit me so hard because they could not hide the fear and the pain that they were feeling. Because in their eyes, I'm a bull, and every time my boys came in the room, Dad, you're a bull. You got a heart of a bull. You're a heart of a bull, and they were like firm, heart of a bull. And I'm like, I know, I got a heart of a bull. It hurts though, and it hurts a lot. And they kept their composure in there. And this is going on in the room with me, and no one letting me know how bad I am. My sponsee's in there, my friends are in there, my best friends are in there, and my wife is in there, and my sister and cousins. And that room was like a party. If you ever been to a Super Bowl party, that was like a hospital party. All the other rooms are like one. I'm hearing like one person. Our room was like, holy cow! But I didn't know it. I was on everything, and I was like dying. So, but I'm like, I come out of it. I'm like, oh my freaking people! And then who knows? So there's this going on, and they're keeping me alive and up and free. And they're like, it's not that bad. You're gonna be fine. And like, but little did I know that later on, there's another event taking place. You guys. And it happened when my son got ill. It happened when this went happened. You guys kick in. in a way that, and that's what, it hurts me. And this week, I felt so much gratitude and pain and sorrow to know that so many people hurt for me. That was going on downstairs. That was going, the conversations that were taking place. And then my wife trying to reassure my son, he's gonna be all right. But then not really knowing if it's gonna be all right. Not knowing if for Hunter, you wanna have faith, fear, faith, fear, faith. But the facts are the facts. We're in that widowmaker. We're there. We're dancing with it. You know. So how do you know? You know. You want to have fear. You want to have faith. You want to fear faith. And I'm in a room and they're all making me feel good. And it wasn't until I went in for the procedure that they told. Now it's just me and they're like, this is happening and this may happen. And if this happens, we'll have another meeting. And I'm like, oh wow, okay. And bad company's playing. Yeah, I'm like, man, these surgeons got the rock and roll on it here. This is crazy. Feel comfortable, and I like the song. So let's go to work. Steady hand, sir, steady hand. And I'm standing here. So that's what happened. So everybody's like, I can't believe you're standing here. I can't believe you're standing here. I can't, oh my God, I can't believe. And it each one was like stacking on top of the next one. And I'm like, it was crushing. Not in a, I don't know if it was good or bad way, but it was crushing. And I would just keep going alone somewhere to like process. I'm still alive and I had my wife. She came in somewhere I was at by myself. And I'm like, man, it was bad, huh? And she goes, oh my God, you know. And I don't like to talk about it a whole lot. I just like to go right back to work. Right back to cardio work, right back to medication, right back. It's like a past. It was over with, it's done. But the reality is it happened and it affected a lot of people. And they worry, and that's years of continuous. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm in the chair that I'm supposed to be in. Everywhere I moved around in the room, it was my chair. It was the chair I was supposed to be in. It was the moment I was supposed to be in. We're right where we're supposed to be in. And it's hard to believe sometimes when we're in it. It's hard to believe. It is when we're in it. And then other times you're like, gosh damn, this is what I earned this. This is amazing. This is amazing. But then there's other times, man, I love this fellowship so much. I love it with everything. And the basic text has been like my lifeblood. It's just, I love reading it. I love holding it. So when I hold it and I feel it, I smell it, I just look at our symbol. It just does so much for me. I owe everything to Narcotics Anonymous. And I like to recognize that, like, with my first, like, wow, what is happening? And where I fully know how powerful you are, what you mean to me, was when my grandfather went through a situation. When my son also went through a situation, my youngest, who's now 6'4" and like a beast, was at Children's Hospital. And when my grandfather was going through cancer and stuff, and I didn't know what I was going to do, and by gosh, and how my higher power put the right people with me, like, and my friend Tracy would say, you guys are made for each other, because I'm like who I am, and my wife was up here reading, but when my son was sick, I crumbled, and she rose, and my friend said, that's why you guys are made for each other. Because you weren't, you know, you needed her at this moment, because I was broken. I was broken of Children's Hospital. You know, when you're on that street on Children's Hospital, that's big business. But you guys, I mean, when you have thousands and thousands of addicts, strangers praying directly for you and your son, it's got some action, and that action took care of that situation when I was wavering. But when my grandfather got sick, it was the same thing, and that was my first, what am I going to do? You know, I'm not sure how many years, but I also gave him multiple years of good grandson. I gave him multiple years where he could be proud of me, like, this is my grandson. And because the pictures, I was little, he was big, migrant worker, big man, and I broke him. In addiction, broke that man, broke him. Not proud of it, but that's what addiction does. Broke him, and you repaired him. I didn't repair him, you repaired him. And then when he passed, I would go to meetings and share about it. We're gonna be cool, we're gonna group up, we're gonna be cool. And then I would go, and then I would come and I'd go to a meeting and would share about it. And when it finally happened, you guys were there, And I got through it. I'm still standing here. I got through it. And it was like, wow, man. It was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, though. This is like my dude, my grandpa. He's my man. And then just slowly started, you know, healing myself. And I went to my grandmother's. I'd go every week to see her. And one morning I was there 2 weeks later. And she said, you know, when your grandpa couldn't sleep at night, we would lay in bed. And he just loved to talk about you. Just loved to talk about it. Lay there, and he would just couldn't sleep. We up all night long, and he just loved to talk about you. And he says, you know, I could die in peace now because I know he's going to be okay. So when I want to think about how much I love the fellowship and the people in the fellowship and all the hugs that I'm going to continue to grab, I didn't do that. You guys did that. You guys gave me my grandfather back. You gave me to him again. Because I sat in that room that very first time, crying and screaming and uncertain, and rose my hand and said, I'm an addict and I need help. You guys helped me only because of you and all the others in the fellowship have I been able to do and be successful in the spiritual things of my life. Only because of you, the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, around the world, in this room. And I'm forever, ever, ever grateful. This convention committee, thank you so much for what you're doing, for what you've done, your selfless service. It is amazing. The theme is amazing. Hug your speakers. Our predecessors are getting older. Older. And the stories they tell, you will not be able to tell the same. Listen to their stories. Hear them, feel them, hug them. They paved the way for us. Only because of our predecessors are we allowed to do what we're doing now. I love you all. Have a great convention.
Let's thank both our speakers again for sharing their experience. Thank you both. All right. Dean has been asked to read just for today and close the meeting with a third step prayer. Once the meeting has circled up, readers will ask for a moment of silence, followed by the third step prayer, starting with many of us have said. Dean?